There's a condition that so many people suffer from. And they know they're suffering from it, but they don't know what to do about it. We call it small-mindedness. Total, unwavering obsession with the smallest and most insignificant parts of your life. People who get obsessed by the way somebody looked at them, what somebody said to them. Somebody did you wrong 42 years ago, and you refused to let go of it. My mother-in-law, until she lost her mind, which was a gift, would repeatedly tell the stories of the people who did her wrong. And she was in her 80s. The only thing that got me through that was a dream in which I socked her in the jaw when she tried to tell one of her stories. A dream, but it paid off. We are surrounded by people who do this, and more unfortunately, we do it. We get caught up in our little mini dramas, and they're so ugly, they're so unimportant, they're so awful, and they become so big. And they can really destroy a life. They can destroy your entire life. One little hurt, or a series of them. What it really represents is an enormous misfocus in your life, and a tightness and a wounded upness that you might as well be tied to a chair, you know. You can't function, you can't live. And what's so fascinating to me is how many people who do spiritual work still hold on to these things. And they always come to me and they always express them as, but, and then they start to tell you the thing that still haunts them, that still irritates them, that isn't fair, that isn't right, that shouldn't be this way, with no understanding that it is that way and there's nothing you can do about it. If you try fighting this part of yourself, you essentially give it energy. You give it more strength. You become more wound up in it. And the only way to escape this condition is to accept that it's there. And then to accept the situation. If it's a past tense situation, to accept that it happened and say, okay. To forgive whoever brought that into play, whoever it was. And that forgiveness and that acceptance will unravel the knot that you are tied up by. But it has to be a conscious act, because otherwise it will be a story you tell yourself. Oh, I forgive them. and it won't be true. It'll still be lodged inside. It'll be lodged in some place that you just put it here instead of there. And you'll still be able to get to it at any point you need it. And when do you need these things? Huh. It's strange to talk about it as a need, but it really is that. There are touchstones that the ego mind requires to lock it up, to insist upon its viability, on its importance in our life. And these are the little tiny stories that we have that will free the ego into being its master of you. And when does it need to do that? When you are starting to become liberated from your ego. That's when it needs to do it. When you're starting to finally experience spiritual opening, spiritual awakening, when you're starting to feel, wow, this kind of deep, profound inner liberation from your own bullshit, from your own burden of you. That's when it's needed. That's when it will come full force.
Oh yeah, that.
Or somebody will trip you up in the moment now. They will create a situation now and you will go for it because this ego does not want to let go. It does not want to let you free of it. The ego starts out as an interesting construct. My granddaughter, for a long time, in her first 2 years, would refer to herself as Talia. Talia wants this, Talia wants that. It was an objective third-person experience. And then she discovered, I want that. I want it. And it went from being Talia wants to I want, and that's the beginning. And now she's in her terrible twos, which I love. But they're very, no, I won't do that. I don't want to go there. I don't want to eat that. Whatever it is, it's a definition of I. And we need that I. And that I starts to build a history of itself, and it builds a sense of what makes it happy, comfortable, satisfied, and what will give it future happiness and satisfaction. So this little mind thing is starting to work itself into a story that this is what I am, this is what I want, this is what I want to be, this is what I want in the future, and it starts to program you to build in happiness for yourself, for your ego mind. And it has no idea that it is in any way separate from the deeper truth of you. When Talia would say, Talia doesn't want that, or Talia does want that, or Talia is this, there was an objective aspect to that, a kind of awareness of something watching her and talking about her in the third person. That's more real and true than when the ego takes over. Because once the ego takes over, it starts to build a kind of autocratic need for its own self-satisfaction. And it becomes more important than the self. It becomes essential in terms of that which needs to be placated and that which needs to be honored and listened to. And we become totally caught in it. Totally caught. And then it becomes like a little tyrant. Because what it wants is its own pleasure. And a lot of times you can't have that pleasure because real life doesn't want to give it to you. Or your parents say, you may not have 17 Oreos. You may not. I want 17 Oreos. And you go into this dynamic of want, wish, battle, and the ego gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And then finally you realize on some level that it's not your friend, but it owns you. It has completely taken over your life. And then what? Well, some people never have a then what. They just live caught in the drama of this ego mind, endlessly trying to satisfy itself, endlessly fearful of the one thing it knows to be true, that it is temporary, that it will at some point cease to be. And it does everything not to know that, not to let you know that, not to face it, to bring into you the greatest possible fear of that dissolution, so that you won't go near it. And it becomes so powerful and so obsessive in most people's life that life becomes a kind of misery, a real kind of misery. To perpetuate itself, it will perpetuate the misery if it has to. It will tell you how terrible you are, how many mistakes you made. It will give you regret. You know, it will play itself in these loops over and over again just to make sure it's got the grip. So, enough about ego. How do you get out of it? How do you become free of this tyrant that is in your life? Maybe not every day, but certainly enough to make you say, I can't bear this. It starts with wanting it to be different. You want something else. You want help. You want to be free of this. Where you choose to go at that moment determines much of the ride of your life. If you go to your pharmacologist and your doctor, you will be given one approach to getting out of this. If you go to the local bar, you will be given another approach to getting out of this. If you are really lucky, you discover there's a whole other path that's been addressed in the literature of the world for thousands of years. Your first approach may be through religion. For many people, that's the biggest satisfaction they can get. And in a way, there's an element of religion that can be a little drug-like. I have the answer. I know the truth. I am the chosen one. I have been blessed by the true knowledge. If you want to see the ego latch on to something, watch how it latches on to that. That you begin to define yourself as someone who knows the truth. And it's really powerful. And it's another form of tricking yourself into thinking that you're free because you have the answers. But beyond religion is philosophy. And then there is this idea of spirituality. And then in spirituality, you come upon this idea that through some kind of practice, spinning in circles, meditating, standing on one leg for 30 years, all sorts of things that you can do, fasting for months, sitting in caves, that you will find this deeper truth that will free you, awaken you, enlighten you, and remove you from all of this cause of suffering, which is your ego. So here are all these paths, and you find perhaps a teacher. And the teacher says, I can free you, I can tell you the way. And some of these teachers say, give me all your life savings, and I will give you what you're looking for. Some of them say, leave your families, leave everyone you know, be with me. And for reasons of enormous need, many people tend to do that. Occasionally, you find a teacher who you know is a true teacher. Someone told me yesterday, an old student of Rudy's, he said to Rudy, "How will I know when I find a true teacher?" And Rudy said, "When they don't limit you, when they do not become your limitation." I thought that was a good line. Of all the millions of choices in the world, how do you find the one that's real? How do you find the one that isn't just going to wind you back up into your ego mind and give you the same kind of limitation and obstruction you had before? Well, I think it comes from a kind of purity of asking, a purity of need. Some people would say, you know, you've had 4,000 lifetimes of the wrong choices. Now maybe this is the right time to get the one you're looking for. But all I know is that when you find that teaching or the teacher, and you sit in a space of stillness in yourself, and you find a teacher who doesn't want students but wants free and happy people around him, when you find that, it tastes distinctive. There's something about it that you imbibe it and you go. And if you're lucky enough to trust it, when that teacher doesn't ask anything from you, when it's freely given, and that's what Rudy did. I mean, Rudy, he didn't ask anything. He always described himself as a water fountain. You know, thirsty, you drink. And we would sit in a room, and every time I would go into that room, I would feel my ego mind fall away. And I would just be sitting in my own presence. At first I thought it was Rudy's presence, and then I realized I could sit anywhere, Rudy or no Rudy. And then Rudy died, and it was still there. There was this presence. But for 30 more years, there kept being Bruce wanting to have that presence. I wanted and needed to sit every day, take that breath into my heart, ask for help to surrender, feel this tightness let go, feel a kind of opening take place, go deeper into my gut, feel it happening there, and work my way into it, and then I had to own it. Anyway, I got it. And then it became like this treasure for me, this sense of being present, of having a self. And I just, and I would sit there with such gratitude and joy and go, this was it. I've arrived. And then I would lose it. And I would lose it sometimes within minutes of standing up from my meditation. Sometimes I would carry it for a day or 2 days or a month, and it would really be part of me, and I would say, it's over, I've done it. I have this awareness, I have this awakening, I have this enlightenment. And it would be so wonderful, and then anything could happen, and usually it was the smallest little thing. I would get angry at one of my kids, you know? You know, I'd slam my finger in a door, and I'd go, and I'd curse the universe, you know? And whatever it is, it's this little thing that winds you back up again into your little ego mind. And there I was. I thought, what did I do to lose this thing? And how can I get past it? How can I get past it? And it was such a frustration for me. And then I met someone who basically told me, you don't get past it. The you that you think you are falls away. The you that is embattled with life, the you that thinks it has a story that needs to be lived and told, the you that's caught up in your romantic lives, in your spiritual life, in your professional lives, all of this stuff, that whole you just suddenly goes, And then there you are, nakedly yourself, just yourself. The burden of you has been placed aside, and there's just this self, just you, truly you. And when it first announces itself, it does so with enormous gushing tears and unbelievable joy, and a sense that the arrival was so hard won and yet so worth it, so beautiful. And also the awareness that you couldn't have gotten there on your own, it needed to do it. You don't make it happen, it happens. You do one thing, you knock at the door, you seek, you knock, you ask. If you knock, it'll be opened. If you ask, it will answer. If you seek, you will find. And that's your job. And then you do it as purely and as completely as you can, and at some point, the burden is gone. It doesn't mean it's over. Because you still have a body, you still have a mind, you still have to function in the world. And that still requires pieces of yourself, of the old body-mind thing. People will refer to you with it. People still call me Bruce. I still refer to me as Bruce. I am still Bruce. And what you really understand is that little ego-minded thing is part of the self. It's one with the self. It's no longer seen as an enemy that's stealing you away. It's no longer seen as something that trips you up and causes grief or joy or whatever it does. It's part of your being. And rather than being at war with that, you begin to truly find these levels of acceptance of every little corner that's left of your being. And the stuff that's left is really interesting because they take a lot away, but they leave pieces. And those pieces have a certain fundamental aspect. And you will find that you will start to see yourself with a kind of clarity that was never available before, ever. You start to see really, you start to see the shit. You start to see that tiny little thing that's so awful as being fundamental. It's you. It's a core part of you. And now, rather than indulging it, running from it, hating it, fearing it, you just go, yes, yes. My experience now, as I've described to all of you and you're watching, is they then begin to chop away everything that's left. Everything. And you really have to, go, thy will be done. Because everything that's thrown away frees you. It frees you and it frees you. And the depth of that freeing can't be known until you watch how much is taken and how much you have to give. And it's an extraordinary process, the process of liberation, the process of freeing you from yourself, from your illusions, from your dramas, from your obsessions, from all of that stuff. It is a rare thing to be part of this kind of possibility. And everyone in this room has arrived in a space where they're knowing about, hearing about, and being in the presence of that possibility. And I'm not talking about being in the presence of this person who's talking. I'm talking about being in the presence of each other in this room, in this space. Some of you know this is real for you. Some of you still don't believe it. Some of you keep going, why not me? Why hasn't it happened? Which is exactly the thing that will corrode and make it harder and harder for it to take place. The only way it happens is when you stop trying to have it happen. I know for myself that it was only when I gave up the search, when I said, look it, you know, I will be the token unenlightened guy. It's okay. I don't mind that. I will just be this seeker. I'll just be this person who's trying. I admired the effort. The trying seemed worthy. It was enough. I never fully expected results, and I wanted them, but when I gave up that, because you can't really know what that is until it happens, I gave up the pursuit, and then the pursuit ended. We're all on this ride. Every one of us is moving in this direction, and every one of us is getting caught by these tiny little ego knots that wind us up and create enormous obstruction. When you're on the spiritual path, they will be more painful than ever, because you'll see yourself doing it and you won't know what to do. You'll see how small-minded you are, how petty you are, how awful you are to other people, how quick you are to anger. All of this shit will come up and you'll have to look at it. And you will be filled with shame, filled with shame. You have to, at that point, sit still and say, yes, even this, even this. Allow it to be. Don't judge yourself. Forgive yourself. Accept the totality of your being. Allow yourself to be a little shit. And allow yourself to be a holy person. And realize you're going to be both. Realize you are the container for everything that happens. Everything. Yin and yang doesn't mean a lot of this and a little of that. You're the whole thing. And believe me, if you look back over the course of your life, you've done a lot of bad stuff. You know? And a lot of good stuff. And you have to accept and weigh all of it. And say yes to all of it. Because as much as you deny the crap, you will be trapped by that denial. The stuff you don't accept about yourself has a hold on you that will torment you. You have to say, yes, of course. You accept the whole of human experience as yours. And the more you know yourself as human, you will discover you're everything. You are everything. You're the darkest corner of human existence, and you are the highest possible expression of what it means to be alive. You're all of that. And it's not to live at one point or another, because that's the ego trying to own it. It's trying to live at where you are at this very second, and this very second is a reflection of the totality of your being, of all being. God is not just light. God is everything. You are everything. You are the whole package. And once you say yes to that, you will find truth in your life. You will find beauty in your life. You will find you in your life. Most of us walk around with no sense of us, of ourself. We walk around, you know, digging in the dirt saying, why not me? What, you know, why don't I have what I want? Well, because you've never known what you really want, and because you don't realize that what you really want is what you have. Trust me, you create your unhappiness. You create it because, in a way, you want it. You create your joy. You are the author. You are the author of your story. Sign it. Put your name on it. Truly. It's who you are. You created it. You have to make peace with it. You have to present it before yourself or before God. You have to say, this was the life I led. This is the life that I could not have avoided. This is the life that needed to be unfolded as it was. And if you accept that exactly as true, you will be free. If you walk around in sadness and shame and regret and doubt and all of that stuff, you'll leave the world with that. You'll leave this life with that. And you don't want to do that. It's very hard to exit this world burdened by that stuff. You know, my mother-in-law got Alzheimer's, and I watched her and I thought, this is the best gift anybody could give somebody. we all think it's the worst thing because, you know, we lose ourselves, we lose our mind. But she lost all of her anger. She lost all of her hostility. She lost everything that had tormented her. And she became like this sweet little girl in the end of her life. It was so beautiful, I couldn't believe it. And I've told this story 1,000 times, but it's really important. The last moment I had with her, just hours before she died, I walked in the room in the hospital where she's filled with tubes and she's propped up in her bed. And she's sitting there and she looks at me and she goes, "That's what we're trying to arrive at. Trust me, we're all trying to get to that place where you go, I did what I could do." And the moment you do that, you're free. You're free. You don't have to own it. You don't have to embrace it. You don't have to drag it through the mud. You're done. It's over. It wasn't your story. It was a story that you observed. You were the driving force on some level, but really, your existence disappears very quickly. And what really remains is this observer who wanted to read this journey of you, that wanted to watch your story unfold, that wanted to suffer and cry and love and get bored and all the things that happen in a human life. It wanted to see, where would this life go? Where would this story go? And you lived it out for them. Some stories end beautifully, some stories end badly, some stories are like not worth telling. But it doesn't matter because the universe wants to find your story, and so do you. And you're living it for God. You're living it for yourself. And as you live that story, and you make peace with that story, you'll be free of it. But if you live it and you believe it completely, you'll never get out of the novel. You'll be reading it over and over and over and over, trying to figure out, what did I do wrong? You did nothing wrong. You were just part of the story. So, look at your small-mindedness. Look at the stuff in you that robs you of your joy, that takes you into the worst parts of your being. Look at it and learn from it. And don't judge it. Don't get angry at it. Don't condemn yourself for it. Don't feel shame for it. Just say, "Ah, yes, this too." And just stare at it clearly. Forgive it. Forgive yourself. And you will find that that tiny little thing that locks you up is the key that frees you. Once you can let go of that thing, freedom waits. It's not there to be as a bad thing, it's there as a liberating force. Once you see what it is, you're free. Everything you think is your torment is ultimately your gift. If you look at it the right way, with compassion, with love, with openness, its power over you is gone. It's gone. But it's the hardest work in the world, as anybody who's done it knows. And it doesn't stop until you're dead. And I can't even promise that, but so it appears to me that at that moment, it's over. At that moment, I'll tell you what I really believe. At that moment, there's a level of thank you from the universe that is more extraordinary than anything you can imagine. Thank you for living this story. Thank you for letting me, the vast being of the universe, touch this little corner of myself. Thank you. Okay. Thank you guys for coming. We'll have classes now until we leave. Maybe we'll go away one more weekend, but I don't think so. So we'll be here at least through sometime in October. Okay. Thank you.